You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Williams, and in this episode, we continue our look of the Friday the 13th films with a discussion on Part 2 and Part 3, 3D. Here to discuss the films with me is returning guest, Mr. Andrew Shaw.
Hello!
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that we are still proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Search Deliberate Noise in your podcast app for more great shows from the network. And we are also sponsored by Audible. For you, the listeners of Plain Label Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to check them out. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/plainlabel. Again, that is audibletrial.com/plainlabel for your free audiobook. And Mr. Shaw, I will tell you that I am listening to a book at the moment that I got from Audible. It is not a slasher, but it is a movie. It is a book that has murder in it, and it is The Secret History by Donna Tartt. And It is a 13-hour epic that she reads herself.
Oh, wow.
And it is just a bunch of, like, terrible garbage people that do terrible garbage things to each other. So that's kind of, and you find out it's like a group of friends and then one of them dies and you know from page one that the group decided that they needed to kill him. And so it kind of goes on from there, but it is a long, long listen. And so I do that whenever I go on a long walk to the library, where at the library I get things such as Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3 on DVD. So that way I don't have to buy them.
Nice.
So there you go. All right. So let's talk about a little bit of a drink roll call. It is early Monday morning where you are at. So what are you drinking this evening? Tell me it is black coffee.
It is black coffee, as always.
Yes.
And I have water in my Thanos Infinity Gauntlet cup that I got when I went and saw Endgame.
Awesome. awesome. So the opposite of last time we talked, where you are drinking the coffee to stay warm this time. Instead of drinking the water to stay cool.
It's a very cold morning.
All right. So drink roll call wise for me, I am having, you know what? Here's what I decided. I was thinking about what should I drink? And I thought, let's add a little class to the B film movies. And so I'm having a vodka martini with a couple of olives and a couple of capers, and the type of vodka I'm having is called Luke's Soya, and it is a potato vodka, and it is quite good. And
classy.
So super classy. And if I end up not being classy by the end of the podcast, that is probably why. So there you go. All right, so let's go ahead and kick off our discussion. We're going to start off chronologically because it would make no sense otherwise, and we're going to start with 1981's Friday the 13th. Part 2.
Hello? On a June night in 1980, Friday, the 13th, 12 of her friends were murdered. Why should Friday the 13th, 1981, be any different? Friday the 13th, Part 2. The body count continues. 14.
You're doomed. You are doomed.
15.
God.
16.
Help!
17. Two.
Jeff?
The day you count on for terror is not over. Friday, the 13th. Part 2.
And the IMDb plot synopsis, and these are wonderful. And I'm glad that I read about half of each of these before putting them into the script. And it goes like this. Months after Alice beheaded psycho killer slash mother Pamela Voorhees at Camp Crystal Lake, survivor Alice is still traumatized because of the murders. But there is one problem. Mrs. Voorhees' son, incorrect grammar, Jason, never drowned and died, so he saw Alice behind... So he saw Alice behead Mrs. Voorhees. Jason finds Alice soon and murders her. 5 years later, a camp counselor in training program begins at Packanack Lodge, right near Camp Crystal Lake. As teenagers in the program start snooping around Camp Crystal Lake, they start getting killed violently one by one. Okay, so tell me about your history with Part 2, the first real Jason movie. And I guess if people have not seen this movie, what would be the selling point that you would, what would be the thing that you would direct them towards this movie as to why they should check this one out?
Well, I think it's the first Jason. So, I mean, he runs around with a sack on his head, which is
that's right.
And I did a bit of a deep dive and had a look at some of the comments and the reviews about the movie. And, you know, my favorite one that I read was that, and I'm not besmirching the movie because I love this series, but it was pretty much, why didn't Jason, if he's been waiting, hiding in the forest, you know, instead of drowning all those years ago, why didn't he go and see his mum? Because that would have solved a lot of murders. That would have stopped a lot of murders and a lot of people wouldn't have died. This is fun. It's, you know, they're all fun, but this one is, you know, it's the first Jason. So it's a bit, I found it a bit more violent without a lot of the blood. And that was, I think the MPAA ripped it to shreds, you know, like Jason would most camp counselors. And it's got the, you know, it sort of sets off the, there's a lot of the horror tropes that we come to love in bad slasher movies. You know, there's the sex and violence and the nudity and people making really stupid decisions. So you yell at your TV and it's just that it's a stereotypical movie, but it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah. I thought this was one where, this one's my favorite of the three so far. I loved the fact that we have the we have Alice and we basically have the previously on X-Men sort of beginning. And I really liked that because I was like, oh yeah, yeah, okay, here's essentially what happens. And then I didn't realize once we get into part three that that was just a thing they were doing, even though they come out every year, right? So it's not like it's a 10-year difference and you got to remind people what's going on or anything like that. I was very surprised at the Alice death at the beginning because I didn't look anything up about this movie. I had not seen this one before. And so I hadn't, you know, as far as I knew, she was still, Adrienne King was still the main character, right? Because she was the survivor of the first movie. So I was like, okay, she's going to be the survivor here if she's in it. And they're spending all of this time having her have these sort of, having these nightmares of her past. And I was like, oh, it's going to be like about PTSD. And turns out they saved that for the next film. And I was like, it's, you know, I kind of like this direction that they're going and she's dead. So I was like, oh yeah, I'm liking this. And holy shit, she got an ice pick in her face or something like that.
Did she ever?
Ooh, and I was like, wow, that was startling. I was like, I kind of liked that. We have the 5 years later, the 5 years later title card or the little caption, which I liked that piece to where it kind of explains how the chronology sort of works to where it's not like he's a little kid jumping out of the lake still.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, he's grown up. And so I was like, okay, I dug that. I was a little bit surprised when we have the, when we have the young woman who in the IMDb, she was too young. So they had to cut out the nudity piece. Right, when she was the, she was introduced first at the payphone, and so I thought kind of that those two were going to be the main the main people, and then we end up meeting the, quote, final girl, right, as Amy Steele as Jenny.
The big entrance with her in her Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, with the Beetle, with a bug that doesn't reliably start. And I'm like, wow, this is not at all going to come up later, right? This is not
foreshadowing.
This is not at all going to be a thing. And so I really liked that. And I was kind of, one of the other things I wrote in here was I was ready for the lost Weasley brother, as I put him, the redheaded kid.
Yes.
I was ready for him to get his, and he doesn't get killed as far as I see.
No.
And I was like, wait a minute. I was like, what the hell's going on? Like, he just kind of leaves. And I was like, because he was, for me, not my favorite actor that I've ever seen in my life. And so I was like, oh, I'm ready for him to get his. And then it didn't happen. And I was like, oh, come on, bummer. Because there were so many people that died in this movie. I thought for sure he would be one of them. So before we get into sort of which deaths you liked and all that sort of thing, what were some of your favorite scenes from this movie? And if they end up being deaths again, that's okay as well.
Well, the one that made me laugh, and I went over it again this morning before we started, it's the girl who has the dog Muffin.
Oh, yeah. The girl that she's essentially wearing clothes, but not really.
Yes, and she seems to always be cold.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
But her dog goes missing, and she's a bit worried, and then when she goes for that walk at night, and it makes me laugh because she's standing on the, you know, the banks of the lake, and she sort of just looks around and goes, Muffin. And it's like a very half-hearted, like, I'm supposed to be down here looking for my dog, so I better yell out. And then she just takes all her clothes off and goes for a swim. It's just baffling. Like, it's out of nowhere. She just goes, it's like the director went, oh, well, we need some nudity in this. Quick, you take your clothes off, go for a swim, and that'll be done.
Right. Yeah, that was an interesting thing, too, because they set up right away, hey, we're all going to go to town, you guys stay here, and we've got the sort of, oh, I don't even know what to call him, but like the not John Travolta looking guy, where he's like, oh, I'll also stay behind with this girl that's going to go and get naked in the lake. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, here's our gratuitous sex scene, and then they're going to get killed. Well, that doesn't happen for him at all.
Oh, no.
And I was like, wait a minute, what? Like, I'm predicting all of these things that's going to happen, and they're not happening for these people. I think that was Scott. Yeah, that's who it is. Yep. Russell Todd was the actor. And so I put that, so Scott gets a scratch and doesn't even get laid. I was like, come on.
So. He got to see her naked. He ran off with her clothes.
That's right. He was very immaturely just running off with all of her clothes, which was weird. I thought that the sheriff had a pretty nice death. I liked that. I think he was the sheriff anyway.
That was the hammer in the back of the head.
Yeah, that was a good one. Whoa. I was like, ooh. Oof. And then, go ahead.
I think with the, especially because, you know, reading about how the MPAA cut out a lot of the gore and the blood, it's almost more brutal. Mm. It's a bit more shocking. Like the start with Alice getting the ice pick and the sheriff getting the hammer. It just sort of, I don't know, I think... I find with a lot of horror movies, the more gory it is, the more unrealistic it is. And you sort of go, oh, and you have a bit of a laugh. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you don't see a lot of blood, it looks almost real. Mm-hmm. And so him getting hit in the back of the head with that hammer made me actually go, oh, geez.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, a lot more full on.
Yeah. I will say that my favorite of the deaths, and I'll get this out of the way, was I absolutely loved the wheelchair guy death.
Yes, that's my favorite too.
I thought that was so good. So not only do we have the machete to the face, and you're like, oh, and you're kind of groaning, but then we have this really, it's like sort of goofy, sort of terrible, like sort of terrible if it actually happened, the pushing down the stairs from nowhere, and just him like falling down there like freaking Samuel L. Jackson and Unbreakable or something. And you're like, oh my God, not only does he have the machete to the face, but now he's got to fall down all these stairs.
It's almost slapstick in a way.
It really is. Yeah. But it was one of those that was like straddling the line between it being kind of goofy and also funny. And also, it also horrifying. So,
well, it's just mean too. Like, everyone gets killed in it, but it's sort of he the poor guy in the, he's already in a wheelchair, and not only does he get a machete in the face, but gets humiliated by getting shoved down some stairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so then it transitions for a while because, you know, Jenny and Paul are gone. And so we have the girl that is with, and I'm looking for who it is. Is it Mark? Is that the guy that was in the wheelchair? Mark or yeah, Jason, maybe? Yeah. And so he's in there, and we've got the woman that's with him. And I was like, so this girl with the paralyzed guy, she goes into basically they're going to have sex. And so she's like really laying it on thick with the whole, like, well, does a new thing work below your blah, 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 and all yeah. this kind of stuff. And I'm like, holy shit. Okay. And I was like, and so then she goes into her cabin and she like finds matching underwear to match her bra. And I'm like, well, she wasn't wearing that to begin with. Okay, weird. That's weird for a movie, right? And so then she puts on these clothes, and they're like, and then she's bending over this car, and they like fit her all weird. And I was like, this is not titillating at all. Like, it's like, I put these underwear fit her like a trash sack. Like, I don't understand what's going on with this. And then she kind of gets like drug along throughout the movie for a while, and she's the, you know, she's the one, she's the damsel for a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, which I didn't necessarily completely understand. And then we had Amy Steele, who kind of comes into front and center as Jenny, and she kind of gets the whole final girl bit, and she has a pretty good little chase for a while. And then she gets underneath the bed, and it's when she gets underneath the bed, that's where I started having a little bit of issue with it, is because she's under there. And then of course, because of movie magic, that's when a mouse happens to show up, or a rat or whatever. And then it's weird because then Jenny like pees herself from her foot or something, because she pees herself, but it's like right next to her foot. And it's obviously like a tube coming out of her jeans.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, wait, that is like, why would she pee herself? Like, did these guys know how women pee? Like, what's happening here? So I didn't understand that at all. I thought that this mother scene where she figures it out, and you get to see where Jason lives, which I thought was really interesting. And you get to see the shrine, which I thought was very disturbing.
Mm. It was a good touch, though. I like the shrine. I think that yeah. was a bit of a clever idea.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. And I like how she figures it out like very quickly and puts the mother's sweater on and becomes Mrs. Voorhees.
Mm.
Right. And I was like, ooh, this is like, I like that. Like, this is interesting. And we do have, I guess let me ask you this. So the iconic image is the hockey mask, and we don't get the hockey mask. We get the sack on his head, like you mentioned. What do you make of that visual in this movie? Pretend that there's no the Elephant Man, and there's no other things that look sort of like this. So what do you say that this is how it ended up being? Like, would you be okay with it because you didn't know that the hockey mask iconography ever existed, or do you not care for it, or what?
I like it enough. I think it works. I think they were still trying to figure out what to, you know, reading from some of the trivia on it, the production designer said that they wanted something that he would be able to find, like living out in the woods there.
Mm.
You know, it's not hard to find. He might have been able to sneak into one of the campsites and find a pillowcase and stick that on his head, or a sack and stick that on his head. So it kind of works for what they're going for, and it works for the movie. I think it doesn't, it's harder to portray emotion, or, you know, there's some scenes later movies where, especially when Kane Hodder plays Jason, and he shrugs a lot, or he like, you know, there's a bigger huff and stuff, and you can get a bit more of emotion out of him. Whereas with the sack covering so much of the head, it sort of, it just makes him a merciless killing machine. He could almost be a robot. And so it works for the movie, but I think that it really, Jason really comes into his own once the hockey mask is put on.
Mm-hmm. So what did you think of Warrington Gillette, I guess is the actor's name that played him in this one? Like, how did you find him?
I was reading about that, and it's actually not him for most of it. He he bailed on the movie after getting, I think he got hurt and just said, nah, that's it. I'm trying to remember what his name was, but the guy who actually does it is a Let me see.
Is he a stunt performer, or is that the third one? Where it was like a British stunt performer.
Most of them are usually stunt guys, because they, Steve Dash is the stuntman who plays him in pretty much every scene. Mm. So Gillette only plays Jason when he hasn't got the mask on, whereas the rest of the time it's Steve Dash who was the stuntman on scene.
Okay.
And the problem is that he was uncredited, so he doesn't get credit for playing Jason at all in the credits of this movie.
Mm.
But when they do flashback scenes in 3 and they show him, he's the only one credited.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because Gillette cracked the sads and went home on something, supposedly. And so he did most of the role. So everyone's favourite is Kane Hodder. I think Kane Hodder brings a lot to the character. But I think it's the evolution of Jason too. You know, he's... As far as we know, this is one of the first big sprees he's gone on, so it's still working stuff out for him as well.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and I like that, and I like how, I guess the big thing for me was that whole shrine scene. Like, if that shrine scene isn't there, it would just feel very generic, and it wouldn't have much of a connection with the first film. And so I was really pleased that that was there, and it does show sort of his either connection or obsession or just his unwillingness to let go of his mother's memory and that totally. Sort of thing. And so I really liked that. Let's talk about the ending. So we have this end, and we get this extended slow-mo of the reveal of Jason's face, and it looks like Jenny is in trouble. And then after an extended, like I said, sequence of showing his face in this very slow-mo long sequence, it then cuts to she's being put into an ambulance. And it seems like, unless my memory is mistaken, that Paul is okay too.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, Paul is okay? Jenny's all right? Where the fuck is Jason at? And I put, wait, what the fuck? What the fuck is actually going on? Because it just ends. And I was like, if this is the end, what is that? Because yeah. I'm like, what is this? And so I was kind of like 95% of the way with this being just a very fun kind of schlocky B movie that's just, you know, you're in it to watch the kills and you're in it to see the people get, you know, mostly naked and then die and all that kind of stuff. And I was liking that. But then it feels to me like this series has some problem finishing their movies.
Yeah, totally.
That the end is the biggest trouble area.
Yeah, to me, it also comes across as they wrote the script with most of it, and they said, oh, we'll work out the ending later. And whether or not they shot in chronological order, but they got to the point they went, oh, shit, we're out of money, we're out of budget. Quick, just, oh, this will do.
We'll just put you in the ambulance. It's fine.
Yeah,
like,
you're
all right. Okay.
Just get in.
Yeah, and so I don't know. So I do think that this is, of the three, I think this is my favorite one, because I think that Amy Steele is pretty good. I think she's a little bit like, Heather Langenkamp, to where she's not a great actress, but she's good enough for what she's supposed to be doing. And, you know, I was disappointed to see that for part 3 that they did want her back and she turned it down and then sort of regretted that she turned it down after the fact.
Yeah.
It seemed like. And I think that that would have been interesting to have her in there. And so I don't know. So I did like this one quite a bit. What did you think of this movie in comparison to the other two so far?
I like this one too. I mean, as a horror fan, like the first one, I think... You could almost take the first one as a standalone film, mm-hmm. just based on it being, you know, Mrs. Voorhees, and it's, you know, it has all the tropes and everything, but it's not Jason. And, you know, this being the first Jason, it's sort of, you need to have it, you need to watch it for the series. I like Alice because she's not useless. She's not just a screaming woman. You know, some of the slasher movies you watch and it's just, she's just screaming and just happens to get lucky at the end.
Like maybe our next movie, maybe.
Yeah. And so she's that Heather Langenkamp. She's probably not on Jamie Lee Curtis's level, but
right.
you know, not far behind for the Halloween series. And it's different. So it's good. It's, you know, it's, we're not worried about, you know, you always know who the final girl is going to be by the last sort of maybe 20, 30 minutes. And with her, it was like, no, actually, she's capable. I'm not worried that she's going to keep falling down and she's not, you know, she's smart enough to chuck the sweater on and pretend to be Mrs. Voorhees. So it, you know, it's actually a really good entry. I mean, you don't have to watch it, but it's good to get the whole story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say if people haven't seen this one, if maybe they've only seen some of the later ones or the remake or something like that, to check this one out, because I think it's worth the time. I think if anyone has not seen the wheelchair death, I think definitely check that out, because I think even just, I mean, if you don't have context, I think it's like I mentioned earlier, it's gross, it's sort of terrifying if that would actually happen to somebody, but it's also silly, and you can kind of crack a smile and watch this person get killed.
You know? Yeah, it really skirts that line.
Yeah, and I think I don't think that you can craft that well. Like, I think that just sort of happens. Like, with whatever the take that you get, I think that just that, along with the tone, it's just some sort of little movie magic that just seeps its way in there.
Totally.
So before we get to the third movie, I do want to talk briefly about the bonus features that I watched on this mm-hmm. DVD. So one of the things on there is just kind of a retrospect about about the series. But then I watched another one, and it was about the horror conventions. And horror conventions are not too dissimilar from your comic conventions. You know, it's just like a place to meet up with like-minded people and see people that you recognize from TV and, you know, shake their hand, pay your $40 to get your picture taken with them and move on. But I was watching this and it just made me feel sad. Like, I just felt bad for everyone at this horror fest, or whatever I think it was called, horror fest. And I felt bad because it was not only some of the characters from this movie, but it was also characters from the first film. And it was, you know, the people that did the music, and it was Sean Cunningham mm-hmm. and people like that. But it was also Child Jason, the guy that played Jason when he was a kid. And it was like a big deal that he was there, and they wanted to know how he got. Like, what did he pull from his personal life to get into character? And he's like bringing up all this nonsense. And I'm like, that is complete bullshit. I was like, there's no way that he was like, oh yeah, let me use this, this time where I was, you know, my mother got murdered in order to jump out of this lake and blah, blah. And I was just like, this is horseshit. Like, this is all like just such pandering to these like somewhat famous people. Like 30 or 40 years after the fact. And I was just, I don't know. I just felt bad watching it. And it was a thing where it was kind of like, it's very similar to what they would have done if they were talking about comic conventions from maybe like the late 80s or early 90s or something like that, before it really mm-hmm. became a pop culture norm, to where it would have been like, oh yeah, isn't that cool that this person's here, but look at how the documentary is sort of making fun of them while also covering the scene, or covering like what's actually happening. And it was this tiny little space, and it was interviewing the person that had put on the horror fest, or whatever it's called. I'm hoping it's horror fest, because I'm saying that word a lot. And it was like interviewing that person. And that person was very much like he was like very overweight and had a lisp and didn't seem the most well-educated person and wasn't very articulate. And I was just like, ugh, brother, like I just felt like, why put this on there? Like, this is supposed to be celebrating the franchise. This seems like you're making fun of the people that enjoy this movie and this series. So that was kind of, I was like surprised at how that was kind of disappointing to watch and kind of made me sad to watch.
Yeah, for a series that very much, especially in the later entries, panders towards the audience that they love, and goes out of their way to do the tropes and have the, you know, the more intricate kills and things like that, it just sounds like they're really slapping their audience in the face.
Yeah, it did. It did seem kind of like that. Now, I'm glad that I ended up getting this, because this is a movie where I can see myself while I'm doing something else. Like, maybe I'm going through Like I'm culling a comic collection, or I'm sorting this or that, or I'm going, you know, I'm editing a podcast or something, and I can put this on in the background.
Yeah.
And I can just watch this on and on repeat, and I don't have to sit and follow and try to figure out character motivation, and I don't have to figure out, like, ooh, look at how brilliant this line reading was, or anything like that, yeah. Or look at the way that Steve Miner was, look at the way that he shot this, or whatever, you know?
Oh, wow, I missed this plot point, now I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's right. This is so intricate that I missed a piece of it, and now the whole deck of cards is falling. So it's not a movie like that. It's something that it is, you know, I could be folding laundry or I could do whatever and have it on in the background. And it's just a bit of fun. And I'm glad that we watched that one, because even though I have issues with the last probably 5 to 10 minutes, I think that it's a solid slasher horror movie. And so I was glad to see it.
It's a strong entry, and it's like you say, except for that last little bit. But it's sort of sets up what's to follow really as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anything else about part two before we move on to the next one?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything. I think you're right about the start with Alice, and, you know, everyone thought, and I think even she thought she would come back for longer, and then all of a sudden there's a nice pick in her brain. But otherwise, no, it's just, like I said when I was talking about it before, it sets up all the tropes we come to expect for slasher movies, you know, the sex, drugs, nudity, and extreme violence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, while I eat that olive. So, our next movie, it is from the following year, and it is Friday the 13th, Part 3.
Weekends are a good time to escape to the woods. Unless the weekend begins with Friday the 13th. Because 13 is an unlucky number. But out here, so are 1 through 12. Because these are Jason's woods. And nobody leaves them alive. Friday the 13th, Part 3. In 3D. Jason. You can't fight him. You can't stop him. And now, you can't even keep him on the screen. Friday the 13th, Part 3 in 3D. Now, when it comes to killing in Jason's woods, Jason will come to you. Friday the 13th, Part 3 in 3D. A new dimension in terror. It will scare you. Count on it.
The IMDb plot synopsis for this one is also a beauty, and it goes like this. After being defeated by Jenny Field, Jason managed to escape and is now on the run. He kills an capital O, capital C, an old couple, out in the woods, and arrives at a private campsite known as Higgins Haven. A day later, Chris Higgins, who had an encounter with Jason once as a child, and her friends, in capital H, capital F, arrive to the campsite. However, when teenagers stumble into a barn, they find Jason and are then killed. Jason then sees the rest of the teenagers and begins killing once more and gets a new hockey mask. It's now up to Chris and the rest of their friends to stop Jason. I love that. That is so poorly written. Okay, so
that's wonderful.
So, Friday the 13th, Part 3, 3D. I had messaged you. I did not watch this in 3D, but when I got this from my library, And when I put this on my Plex account, I did rip both the regular version and the 3D version in case I do come across some 3D glasses and I do want to watch it in 3D at some point.
Yeah,
so I have both of those just in case it happens to be where I would end up needing to watch it in 3D at some point.
We have a cinema here in Melbourne called the Astor, and they do a lot of old movies and a lot of double features and things like that. And I've always wanted them to do Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D. And I think it was Freddy's Dead was in 3D as well. And I'd just love for them to do a double feature of both of them in 3D around Halloween, because I'd be first in line to see it.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting. So tell me about... what you think about this movie. Like, what is it about Part 3 that is worth seeing, or what does it add to the series, or what is it that you appreciate about this one?
So it's the 3D elements, when you watch it in not in a 3D film, are hilarious. There's yes. points where, at the right, especially at the start, when the guy is trying to put up the washing line, he's got the stick right at the camera. And the snake that jumps out. And,
and the baseball bat at one point from the kids.
Yeah, and I find this one, it's a lot more fun than the second one. Uh-huh. There's a lot more silliness to it, and the characters are a lot more cliched. But it's iconic because it's where Jason gets the hockey mask. He doesn't get it until an hour in, but he does get the hockey mask. And it's, you know, even if you didn't watch Part 2 but you still were interested in the series, this is one you need to watch because it's, you know, it sets up how he looks from then on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. So this was one where I think that it's worth seeing because of the mask. I think that there are, again, some decent death scenes. I think that some of it is ridiculously not great. Yeah. I think this is also the movie where Jason starts to become the hero of the movie. Starts to become the reason that you're watching, right?
Because until we get to Part 4.
Well, because you're watching it here and you're like, good, just get him. Like, just get this Shelly guy off of my screen.
Oh, right? I love Shelly.
Oh, no. I did not like him at all.
The thing about Shelly I love is, I mean, he's a stereotypical nerd.
Yeah.
He looks like, you know, it sounds horrible because, you know, it's mean, but when, especially back then, when people think of horror movie or comic book nerds or practical jokers or whatever he was, that's what he looks like. Right. That's what they look like, you know, and it's, so they're very mean to him in a lot of it, but he's also the catalyst for Jason to get the hockey mask as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, that is true. So going from the beginning here with my notes, I like that you mentioned it, even if you hadn't seen Part 2 or even Part 1 for that matter, this has even a longer bit of footage for the previously on Friday the 13th. And it basically goes like through a condensed version of the third act of Part 2.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, holy shit. Like, you know, it's not a long movie. You know, I mean, it's an hour and 35 minutes, and it's at least probably 5 to 10 minutes of it spending on the previous movie, plus the credits. So, I mean, the actual runtime of this has got to be like an hour 20, an hour 25, something like that.
Oh,
of new footage. And so it doesn't waste much time in getting straight to it. Mr. Shaw, do you realize that, or do you wonder why they didn't call this Friday the 15th? Because isn't it supposed to be, or Sunday the 15th? Because it's 2 days later, right? I think it's 2 days later, so it's Sunday the 15th, Part 0. Because it's like, I don't know, this is sort of where they get real fast and loose with things, it seemed like.
Yeah, the rest of the movies are not always on Friday the 13th.
Yeah, so. Where they're like, this is the name of the franchise. It's much like Freddy's not always on Elm Street. We'll just say it like
exactly.
that.
Right? Yeah.
And so they, my second note was, wow, we have trash humans and Jason now has become our savior to get rid of all of them.
Yep. Pretty much. Yep.
And we start off with just, we have all of the stereotypes and we have all of these, what I think IMDb's trivia is generous to say that they were hired based on their looks, not based on their ability as actors and actresses. And I was like, wow, what a slap in the face to the people that worked that door. That's what your producer or director says why they've been hired. I thought that it was interesting when we get this dubious motorcycle gang and the whole barn sequence, and we have this was like a thing in the 80s where if you were a black woman in the 80s and you were in a movie, you had to have some kind of red bandana on, and then you had to kind of go around like sneaking and like skulking around and trying to like scare people. Because I feel like either I watched this when I was younger, or I watched several other movies where there was a character that looked just like this. Because I saw her and I was like, oh, okay, this is just, like, I recognize this. Like, this is this in the barn. Like, I've seen this. So I don't know for a fact that I have seen this before. But I definitely, there's some of the visuals that were familiar to me in this one.
Oh, you get all the stereotypes. And I always saw the motorcycle gang as the director and the writer saying we need to up the body count after the last two. So it's how do we get some more people just to turn up? And you get it by Shelley knocking their bikes over.
So yeah, Shelley knocks their bikes over. He kind of gives them the big, you know, doesn't he give them, he like flips them off or something like that also. Yeah. And then they ruin the windshield in his car, and then they don't appreciate that once they get back, of course. I thought that was interesting because at some point we get the dynamic of you definitely want Jason to kill some of them because our heroes are this group of camp counselors to be. And then you've got this group that's, you know, picking on them or out to get them for no real good reason. And so you're like, oh yeah, Jason, go ahead and kill them. And so when they're getting killed, you're like, oh, well, good. Yeah, good. Get them. And then when Shelley's on screen, I'm like, good, get him. get him also. But, and so you do get a little bit of that, the iconic villain turning into the reason that you come to the movie.
Yeah.
That you get in Jason and that you get in Halloween and that sort of thing. And so I thought that that was kind of interesting. Obviously we get the hockey mask, which is a big improvement on the sack.
Yep.
We get this kind of like, we get this unfortunate bit of where it is in the US, in the world, where it's August of 82. And Shelley calls the girl that he's been set up with a bitch because she doesn't like him when he's like this fat doofy guy. And I'm like, geez, buddy, like that doesn't mean that she's a bitch. Like, because you are kind of a goofy looking, like chubby kid and she is not. So excuse her for not falling all over you.
Shelley would have been very on the internet in this day and age.
Yeah, really. That's right. He would have been. Yes, he would have been. So we do get this storyline with Chris, who I had trouble with. So I had trouble with the Chris character because I was like, wait a minute, is she someone from the first movie? Is she someone? She's not impersonating the girl from the second movie because this is 2 days later. I was like, so who is she? And so I kept thinking, like, are we supposed to know this? Or are we not supposed to know this? And why is the movie not either giving me less or giving me more in terms of what I am or am not supposed to know? Because I get that, you know, we have this flashback where she's younger, but I was like, well, when did this happen? Like, when did this happen in the movie world?
Yeah, it's almost like the director and writer wanted to add, like I said, you know, they add the stereotypes and the more, you know, people to murder, but it's also, oh, we need something, a different bit of our story. And it's almost like it's shoehorned in to the whole thing. Oh, I encountered Jason when I was younger and it doesn't fit with, like, it's a Friday the 13th movie. You just need a reason as to why they're at the camp. You don't need anything other than that.
Yeah, really.
You know, and I was reading the trivia of this one, and supposedly he was supposed to sexually assault her.
Ooh, yeah, I saw that too.
And they went, And even they went, no, maybe not.
And I think that that was a good choice because I would have been like, oh, really? Like, yeah. He's supposed to just be a killing thing. Like, he doesn't also have to rape her or sexually assault her.
Yeah.
That would have been too far.
It's like Freddy is, you know, in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, he's a child murderer. They never go in on, did he do anything else? Whereas in the remake, they just straight up make him a pedophile.
Yeah, absolutely. And it
never sat right with me. I always took him as, no, he's a serial killer who kills children.
Yeah, because murdering children isn't bad enough. You've got to have them also be a pedophile, yeah.
Exactly. And, for me, it was like, yes, child murder is absolutely horrible, but if he's doing the other stuff as well, then when he becomes the goofy cartoon character later on, I don't like it.
Right.
But if it's just, it sounds really horrible, but if it's just murder, it's okay.
Yeah, sure. Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's right. And so we do have this bicycle gang that's taken care of. We get the kind of the startling one for me, which wasn't necessarily my favorite. And I don't know that I have a favorite death in this one. I'll have to think about it for a minute, but we have the one that was most surprising to me is when Shelley's date gets a crossbow in the eye.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, where the hell did that come from? Because she's just kind of looking and then all of a sudden there comes a crossbow. And I was like, that's gotta be because they're trying to find more things to project at the screen.
Yeah.
And, here comes a crossbow. But I was like, well, interesting. Why didn't they use that more? Because, he's known for having a machete and he uses all kinds of implements. And apparently this camp has a whole shitload of weapons because holy hell, there's axes, there's machetes, there's knives, there's all kinds of stuff in this
spear
place.
Spear guns.
Yeah, spear gun, right.
I think the spear gun is my favorite one with the, what are you doing? Don't muck around, stop being a goose, and then bang, and it's the 3D. Oh, it's really well shot for a 3D movie, even though you can see the wires. It still looks great.
Yeah. Yeah, you get to, I think the one that I watched, I like rewound and watched just to see and just to kind of chuckle at was the eyeball popping one.
Oh yeah.
Because I read on there and I read that actor was given basically like oversized sweaters and like additional clothes to bulk him up to make him look bigger.
Yep.
And then he had to be a certain size because the stunt performer that was playing Jason was also a certain height. And to make that work, they wanted it to be a certain blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, wait a minute, that's the only reason that they needed that for? And I thought that was so, again, so silly because Chris is right there and he can't speak. He apparently can't make any sounds because there's a mouth over his face. Right. And I'm like, okay. And then not only do they do the old head squeezing, eye popping move, but his head gets crushed and all that. And I think that one is one where I think it's lesser than the one from the film before, but that one is still one that makes me kind of chuckle to myself.
Oh yeah. And it's just that little bit. He does that a few times along the way, the head crush, and it just seems like you've stabbed and you've done all that. That one just seems a lot more brutal than everything else.
Yeah.
You just bare-handed crush someone's skull. Like it's, whoa.
Yeah. And it was interesting to me that, so Steve Miner again is back for part three. And then we have some of the repeat sequences from the first movie to where Kevin Bacon gets that arrow through the neck.
Oh yeah.
In the first one, which was one that we remarked on and is one of the more famous ones. And then we get that again with the post-coital couple in on the hammock.
Yep.
In the third one. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's still an interesting visual. But, did you have to take one from the first movie? Like, it was like, it felt too recent to be kind of like a callback.
Yeah,
but I was kind of like, I don't know, like it still looks okay, I guess, but I don't know if I love that.
But that's when you save for part 7 or 8.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
You do the callback and you do a callback of like 3 or 4 different ones, just having a bit of fun with it.
Once, yeah, exactly.
Because they become comedies anyway, really.
Right. And I thought that this was interesting that we had such a long final girl battle in this one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's ages. It takes so long.
And I thought, in the first two, you know, it's 10, 15 minutes or so. And this one seemed like it went on forever.
He just keeps coming back.
And he just keeps coming back. And you had a little bit of vocalization in this one to where she stabs him in the knee and he's like, ooh, you know, and that kind of thing. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, she's kind of getting the best of him. Like, she hangs him out the side of the barn. Yep. And she is able to escape him. And I never understand. And I think I felt it the most strongly in this movie where I was like, well, if he's sort of dead, just get the fucking bat and beat the shit out of him. Like, what are you doing? Because
axes. There's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you know, there's axes and stuff. Because it's when
they get into mush.
Right. Because it's when the guy, it's when the biker gang guy reappears. In the third act, and I'm like, wait a minute, this dude was just hanging out the whole time? Like, he was just hanging in this barn? And then he shows up for a second, gets his arm cut off, and then gets killed. And then Jason just beats the shit out of him.
Yep.
Like, he's killed, and he just keeps bashing him, like, over and over.
It's almost like Jason was like, I killed you. No, that's not good enough. Hang on. You know, he's pissed off that his work didn't happen the first time.
Yeah, really. It's like, how dare you survive when I killed you the first time? And so I was thinking, like, why the shit doesn't Chris or somebody just do that to him? Like, I get that they're supposed to be so scared that they're not thinking straight and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so I don't know. So I do want to talk. Here's where we get to the ending again. Oh my God. Okay. So we get to this weird, like, she's crazy bit at the end. And it seems like she's on the lake and she seems like she's survived. And she wakes up and then it's the next morning. And Jason, without the mask, is in the bedroom. And he's like kind of clumsily looking like he's going to come out of the window for a while. And then he goes around and then he disappears. And then the mom comes out of the lake. And I was like, what is this? I was like, no way. And then that all sort of seems like a dream. And then poor Dana Kimmel, who plays Chris, is having a hell of a time, like, performing this I'm crazy bit at the end where she's like supposed to be. She's way worse than Ashley Lawrence from the Hellraiser movies. And I think Ashley Lawrence is struggles.
Yeah.
Like, I like her for what that movie is and asks her to do, but I don't think that she's great. And I think that this Chris character is like a B level version of that character because they have the same sort of look, you know, they both are the kind of curly brunettes and the wide eyed brunettes. Mm-hmm. And I just could not make heads or tails of what they were going after with this ending. And then you see, oh no, that's just in her head. He's definitely dead with his axe in his head. And I didn't mean to rhyme that. And I was like, this is the end of the series. Like, this is Steve Miner saying, this is it. He's got the axe in his head. This is the end of it. Right? Mm-hmm. Is that your interpretation of how that ends?
Yeah, definitely. I think they maybe hadn't thought of, you know, because I think every Friday the 13th movie, except maybe Jason X, made a profit. And that's why we got so many of them, because they just made, you know, the budget, whatever the budget was, they made a lot more on top of it. And it was always enough to make another one. But yeah, the ending of this one seems to me like they didn't realize they were going to make more money and make more movies. And so Miner went, oh, let's finish it off. Let's put an axe in his head.
Yeah, it's like, let's just go all the way. Make him dead. We'll have yet another woman who's severely traumatized and goes off to the loony bin, but she'll survive. And I'm just kind of surprised at the number of people that survive these movies. Because I'm always thinking it's just going to be just one. Right? But there's like a handful through the first three movies.
Yeah, there's always a couple with these ones. You know, it's not... excuse me. It's only... I find that if there's kids around, you get a lot more people who survive. But with something like this, where it's mostly adults, it's just, you'd think, oh, well, it's supposed to be one. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's because that's alluding to the next movie, right? Where there's kids around.
Yeah.
Because I definitely have not seen the next one. And I know that the next one, the final chapter where they're like, look, fuckers, this is for real the last one. We're going to put it in the title. This is the last one. We're going to bring back people who worked on the first one and make it the last movie.
And that's why I hate the fifth so much.
Well, we'll get into that. So yeah, so 3D, this one, some of the 3D things also that that were easy to spot was like the juggling sequence that had, yep. It was like, wow, both of these guys are just pretty good at juggling for no reason. And that was kind of goofy.
The snake.
Most of the things, though, it didn't really bother me that it was in 3D. I was like, okay, I get it, but it wasn't anything where I was like, oh man, I'm put off by how this is shot 3D.
It wasn't a 15-minute sequence of something flying around or, you know, just going out of its way to be really 3D. It was just more, we've got a 3D movie, it's a gimmick, let's put a few things in, but we're not going to overstay our welcome.
Yeah, and so I kind of liked that, and I think what I like is, I like that Jason is just kind of a blank slate of a character. And so here, each time he lifts up his mask, I'm surprised each time. Dora's like, whoa, you're revealing your face. What are you doing? You know, and I was kind of like, well, so what is the deal? Like he wears the hockey mask because of blank, because he doesn't like showing people that he's disfigured.
I think, you would think he wouldn't care. You know, he's lived in the forest for so long. He wouldn't know what people think of, disfigured people. Yeah. But I think it adds, I think maybe also he probably thinks it just adds to the menacing of it. I'm going to kill these people, so I may as well put something on. But it wouldn't matter if he didn't have it, because it's just him murdering a bunch of teenagers. But it just adds to our enjoyment of it.
Yeah, and when he does take off his mask a couple times, I'm like, oh, it's the guy from Hatchet is what I always think of when I see it now. And that's what it looked like, and that guy's name's Victor Crowley. That's who it is, from Kane Hodder, like you said, right?
Yeah.
And so we haven't got to those. When does he come around in the Friday the 13th?
Seven. I think he comes in number seven, which is possibly my favorite of the series. So that's
fun. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So yeah, apparently the Hatchet is also a franchise. There's three of those.
Hmm. Yeah. I actually have never seen any of the Hatchet films. So it's one of
those. Oh, is that right?
You
should watch the first one. You would really like the first one.
Well, they're really hard to get here. I can't find them anywhere in Australia. So I'm trying to find a way to get them here that's not going to cost me $60 in shipping.
Oh, okay. Well, when I am not on record, I will find a way for you to do it, and I will tell you. I think that movie is definitely one to check out, because it is like Friday the 13th just turned up a little louder, because you've got your stereotypes and you've got your terrifying villain and he's ripping arms off and doing that kind of stuff. And I like that in that movie as well as this one, your main character isn't there to make jokes. He isn't there to be like, oh, I'm going to make a pun now. And I like the Freddy movies, but I can't do like Freddy, like consecutively without going, oh God, okay, I've had enough of the jokes.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I need a little bit more air than I do on this one, where these are more just, it's a murderous killing thing that just is on a rampage and you can't escape it kind of a deal.
Totally. I think the Friday the 13th are the type of movies that, like you were saying, you can put on in the background, but they're also ones that if you're having a Halloween party that has, you know, more adults than kids, you don't want the kids seeing a lot of this stuff, but you can chuck them on a big screen as background, you know, background footage instead of it being, you know, old movies. But you can have it on, so it's got the kills, and every now and then you can stop and look at, oh, and then keep walking. You don't miss anything by not knowing the story. They're just fun to have on.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And there's not, I mean, for as much talk as you hear about the slasher movie with the nudity and the sex and all that sort of thing, there's like not, this movie didn't have much of that at all.
No.
I was like, this is really tame. Yeah. For what you end up seeing on, I mean, Christ, I'm more concerned when my kid wants to watch Stranger Things 3 than I would be with her watching this. Because, you know, that's got more language and it's got more, it's like more intense for her to watch.
Totally.
Yeah. She could put this on and be like, oh yeah, ooh, he's kind of scary looking. Oh, gross. Look at that guy's got his arm cut off. But that'd be about it, you know?
Yeah. And it's not played for laughs, but especially, you know, as I said before, as you get into the later later entries in the series, they're more. It's more about, oh, how is he going to kill this person? And, oh, this will be interesting. What's going to happen with this? He's picked up a circular saw. What's he going to do with that?
Right, yeah.
You know, they're more stereotypical later on, and it's more about, I want to see what Jason does rather than who's going to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't need to see what sort of history does this person have with Jason.
Exactly.
Right. All right. Well, so yeah. So again, troubling third act. This one specifically with the last like 20 minutes or so, or last 10 to 15 minutes of me not knowing exactly what the hell was going on, where I was like, wait, what are they doing? You know, that kind of thing. And so I don't know. This one wasn't my favorite. I think part two I liked a little bit better, but it still is just like you said, where it's one you can put on in the background and just kind of watch and not worry too much about what specifically is happening and that sort of thing.
Exactly. So,
anything else about Friday the 13th Part 3 3D before we wrap this one up?
Shelley rules.
Shelley rules. I don't like Shelley rules. People can email in and say if they're pro or anti Shelley.
Yes.
Oh man, I thought he was such a goof. Although he was able to get that. That little mini hatchet in the head and get the hair that matched his hair, which I thought that was pretty impressive.
Oh, he's a very clever special effects guy.
Yeah, and then I thought his death was so weak. Like, I was like, oh, give me some kind of cool death with him. Because yeah. He's the guy that's, like, pretending to be murdered all the time or something.
Yeah.
But he just kind of shows up and is dead.
And yeah. It's one of the other things I didn't like about that is he just he's dead. Like, it's not elaborate. It's not interesting. It's just he's dead. Like, it's sad.
He shows up and he's dead. I'm like, okay, well, that's what you get for saying that mean shit about that girl that doesn't like you. So there you go.
He's one of those characters where you sort of, if he hadn't been so mean to that girl, but it was, you know, say they had hooked up, it's one of those ones where you're like, well, at least let the man have sex first, then kill him.
That's right. Throw him a bone, movie. Come on.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. All right. So wrapping us up, if you have any comments, if you are pro or anti Shelley, or if you have any suggestions or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show anywhere over social media, basically. Just search for Plain Label Podcast and you'll find us over there. Say that you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could check out our show notes where you'll find the link to our Amazon wish list as well as our Audible link, where again, you can get something for free just by signing up. So I do want to thank Mr. Andrew Shaw for coming on. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in touch with you, where could they do that?
Best place is on Twitter at Andrew_Shaw23. Yeah, it's probably only the best place. It's probably the place I'm on the most.
Perfect. 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 Well, thank you for listening. And Andrew and I will be back next week as we discuss parts 4 and 5 of Friday the 13th. We'll be right back.